Hi, everyone. I'm Kelly O'Horo, and this is Adaptable Behavior Explained.
Hi there. Thanks so much for tuning in. Today, we're going to be talking about coping skills for trauma symptoms like anxiety, depression, and those attributes are really hypoarousal, like depression, hyperarousal, like anxiety, and they're all symptoms of trauma. So if you like this topic and you want to hear more about this, please like and share and maybe subscribe to the channel so that you can not miss next episodes. And it'll also help me learn more about what you're drawn to and what content you'd like to see more of. So like I said, today we're going to explore a variety of activities and skills that can help alleviate the symptoms associated with trauma. Some of those symptoms might be emotional dysregulation. So I'm up, I'm down, I'm hypo shut down, I'm super anxious or manic, hypervigilance. You know, this is, I'm always thinking the other shoe's going to drop. I, you know, can't sit in a restaurant with my back to a door. These are sort of hypervigilant things. Those can be safety oriented, hypervigilant things, or we can have attachment oriented hypervigilance because of a history of rejection or neglect. Flashbacks or intrusive memories can be symptoms that we're going to look at helping to calm down and tolerate. Avoidance or dissociation is another symptom that we might experience from trauma. And then we also have somatic issues like headaches or back pain, gut issues are 99% of the time tied to unresolved emotional distress. And of course, so many more things that we might deal with because of unresolved distress in our body that is a result of things that happened that we weren't in control of and we didn't have power over, and how they just got maladaptively encoded in our nervous system. So it's important to mention that people with CPTSD or PTSD might experience a combination of these symptoms, and we can not have full-fledged PTSD or CPTSD, which, by the way, is not a technical DSM diagnosis. It's just a layperson way that we address symptoms that oftentimes had to do with pervasive long-term experiences, often related to neglect or abandonment and disruption in the attachment system while we were growing up. So that there's another whole show on that if you want to dig in more deeply to that topic. But these symptoms can fluctuate over time depending on things that are going on in our lives, triggers, stressors, levels of support. I always tell people, consider what's going on. Are you halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired? And if any of those things are going on, there's a likelihood that your tolerance or your capacity is reduced. So we want to have you zoom out and take a full look at what's going on in your life. So we're going to delve into things that you can do, such as cold plunge, meditation, exercise, naturopathic medicine, and yoga. And we're going to talk more about why these things can help you calm your nervous system. It's important to keep in mind that these things are simply skills that can be adopted to help quell symptoms or stabilize symptoms. But these things aren't actually enough to heal trauma entirely. They're helpful to navigate the symptoms of trauma or the distress that we're experiencing in our life. And of course, if you want to really dig into fully healing from the trauma of your story and the symptoms that you're experiencing physiologically, I highly recommend seeking professional help from a mental health professional that's familiar with trauma-informed care and, of course, uses bottom-up therapies and modalities so that you can have effective treatment for your symptoms. But again, there's a lot we can do on our own that doesn't cost a whole lot of money to manage the way we're showing up in our lives. So we're going to dig in. The first thing I want to talk about is cold plunging. I know it's a big buzz right now. It's all over YouTube and all over so many channels. And I know that it sounds intimidating. And so many people even have associations around having been cold in their story. And they're just really avoidant to the idea of cold plunging because it does involve immersing yourself into cold water for short periods of time. It's suggested to spend 3 minutes at a time or 11 minutes a week in water that's 50 degrees or colder. If the water's warmer than that, you'll need more time to bring your body temperature down. This practice has been shown to reduce inflammation, improve circulation, boost your immune system and mood. And it triggers the release of endorphins. And this is a really natural, cool way to use your body and the extenuating circumstances around you to kind of force you know, chemical changes in your body, which is so cool. And it doesn't take very much time. Some studies show that there is as much as a 500% increase in dopamine for as many as 3 hours post-plunging. So that's your motivation to do something and to move forward and to get tasks done. And if you want to dig in more deeply to the content about dopamine specifically, Huberman has an awesome, awesome podcast on that topic. And I'll put the link in our comments below. So I have to say personally that my husband and I just started cold plunging this year, and I just can't say enough about how it's increased my concentration, my motivation, and mood on the days that I do plunge. And I have to be honest, it's never easy to get in. I don't look forward to it. I still stand at the edge of the water and I'm like, ugh, I don't want to get in. It's just, this doesn't sound fun at all, but it's over really fast. And I absolutely look forward to the way that I feel when I'm done with it. And then of course the benefits that I get to experience the rest of the day are really starting to build pathways in my nervous system that it's for sure worth it. So there's getting a lot of pathways of reward and reinforcement that this behavior is serving me. Many people find that cold plunging helps regulate their nervous system, and it provides a sense of calm amidst the chaos of their trauma symptoms. And ultimately, when you think about it, cold plunge, we're activating that sympathetic nervous system response, because if I get in water that's so cold, my body's like, oh rats, we're gonna die here. And so it kicks in that fight response, or that, you know, survival response, and it does it on purpose. But then what gets to happen is when you get out, you get the natural calming effect of going into parasympathetic reaction. And so we are basically forcing our body into those two state changes. And then we get to ride out the benefit of that for, you know, like most of the day, which is really cool. So next on our list to talk about is meditation. Meditation is a powerful tool. It calms the mind. It reduces stress. And if we practice mindfulness or mindful, focused breathing techniques, people with any mental health distress can learn to ground themselves in the present moment, because it helps us automatically shift into a state of calm if we learn to employ these things. It can help us cultivate self-awareness and develop a greater resilience in the face of triggers and flashbacks and things that happen related to our distress. So if you can incorporate meditation into a daily routine, it can foster a sense of inner peace and stability. Now, a little bit of personal disclosure here. I have developed meditation, and we have another episode about that, and MBSR, which is a specific kind of meditation that's from Jon Kabat-Zinn. But last year, my husband and I went to a meditation retreat with Jon Kabat-Zinn and his son, Will, and it was absolutely life-changing. And I talk more about that in another episode. But what I can say is, having continued the meditation practice for sometimes only 10 minutes a day, depending on my schedule, I no longer even take my ADHD medication, because I am able to be so much more present and I have so much more focus. So it really does help to change the brain. So the optimal duration of meditation for achieving the best outcomes and reducing stress in your body, it can vary depending on individual factors like experience level, your goals, and your preferences. However, there is research that suggests that even relatively short durations of meditation practice yields physical health benefits. So if you're a beginner, starting with just a few minutes of meditation per day, such as 5 to 10, can be beneficial for reducing stress, promoting relaxation, and bringing you into a calmer sense of self. And as you become more experienced and comfortable with meditation, you may want to up it, gradually increase the duration of your sessions. Many mindfulness-based stress reduction programs recommend practicing meditation for about 20 to 30 minutes a day. So this is what I do on most days. And this amount of time allows you to experience the full benefits of meditation, including increased focus, emotional regulation, and of course, stress reduction. And all of these things give your body the little vacation from cortisol and the adrenal response that is happening in our body when we're stressed out or when we just have a lot of unresolved trauma in our body. And so these are things you can do on your own that, again, don't cost any money, but can help you to create a sense of homeostasis in a more relaxed state. And again, it does take time, it does take commitment, and you have to decide if that fits for you in your life. So some studies have shown that even shorter or more frequent meditation sessions throughout the day can be effective for reducing stress. For example, taking short meditation breaks for even just a few minutes several times a day can help you reset and recharge, especially during stressful periods. So I know that as a therapist, if I have like a really intense session because someone had a lot of affective release, I will just take 2 minutes and I'll just sit and breathe quietly and kind of exhale the stress and bring myself back down to a state of calm so that I can be ready for my next client. I definitely recommend experimenting with what works for you. Have grace for yourself and keep in mind, it's not about judging your thoughts. It's about just noticing them like clouds floating by. It's also not about emptying your mind. A lot of people say, I can't meditate. I'm bad at meditation. And it's not about being good or bad. It's just about noticing. It's about focusing on a grounding element, like maybe your seat or your breath, and then bringing your focus back to those things when you notice that it wanders off and it's in the land of planning or preparing or daydreaming or whatever your mind does. And notice that I said not if it wanders off, but when, because all of our minds have the propensity to be busy and to have our brains be meandering. And so the objective isn't to do anything about it, but rather just to notice that it's happening. And if you get curious about it later, I wonder why I'm always planning, or I wonder why I'm always thinking about the next thing that I've got to do. It's just about noting it and going, yep, my brain has a propensity to plan, or my brain has a propensity to worry. And just recognizing and naming it, kind of put a mental post-it note on it and allow yourself to return back to your breath or your seat and just notice. Ultimately, the key is to find a meditation routine that works best for you, fits your schedule, your lifestyle, keeping in mind that consistency and regularity are more important than the specific duration of each session. So try it out short. Try out different times of day, spaces in your house or outside, and be curious to discover what works best for you and your personal needs and preferences. It's changed my life, like I said before, and I really encourage you and invite you to give it a try. You don't have anything to lose. So now we're going to move on and talk about exercise. Physical activity is not only beneficial for our overall health, this isn't news to any of you, but it also can be instrumental in managing symptoms of trauma or unresolved distress like anxiety and depression in our nervous systems. Engaging in regular exercise releases those feel-good neurotransmitters like endorphins and serotonin, which helps to alleviate depression and anxiety. So whether it's going for a jog or hitting the gym or practicing yoga, or finding a form of exercise that resonates for you can be a powerful tool in your recovery journey. I know that when the gyms all closed during COVID, I was like, okay, I'm gonna lose my mind if I don't do something. And so I just adopted like 100 rule. I did 100 sit-ups, I did 100 push-ups, you know, I did 100 squats and lunges, and I broke it up because I couldn't do it all at once. And so it was just like moving my body was the goal, and I had a lot of grace for myself about what that needed to look like because there were so many limitations. So these are things you can do when even traveling, and just get creative with it and try not to box yourself into a judgmental thing where it's all or nothing thinking. Just start small and do something. I love how Matthew McConaughey talks about for him, it's important for his body and mind and spirit to sweat a little bit every day. And I think that's a really nice philosophy, and it comes with a nice non-judgmental stance. So getting that heart rate up a little bit, even if it's just for 10 minutes a day, gives your body, again, that cortisol break that's needed. And it's the vacation your body really needs from the stress hormones, which just wreak havoc on the rest of your body if it doesn't get a break. Now we're going to talk about naturopathic medicine. Naturopathic approaches focus on treating the whole person. So they're very zoomed out. A good naturopathic doctor addresses underlying imbalances of hormones and everything else that's going on in our body from a chemical perspective, and they do really thorough intakes if they're good at what they do. And ultimately, checking out those underlying imbalances will promote healing from within. So they'll consider things like dietary change, herbal supplements, acupuncture, and homeopathy. So naturopathic interventions offer a really holistic approach to managing a whole array of mental health symptoms. So you want to consult with a qualified naturopathic doctor that can provide personalized guidance on incorporating natural remedies into your wellness routine at the pace that will work for you and that can be adopted and routine for you. And they'll help work on those things with you. So if that's something that's interesting, I highly recommend checking into that. There's another really great podcast, Dr. Brendan McCarthy. He owns Protea Medical Center in Arizona. And I can say that, you know, he is someone who really looks at the whole body and really cares about his patient's experience. So if you want to learn more about this topic, go check out his podcast. So I have to share that my personal experience with my naturopathic doctor in conjunction with my EMDR therapy has actually taken an autoimmune issue that I had, Hashimoto's, which is a thyroid disease. It's into remission, which medical doctors would often say isn't even possible. And so I don't actually have the blood markers indicate that I have the symptoms anymore. So we really have so much power in our body to heal if we can address things from an understanding that stress impacts everything about its efficacy and every cell in our body and every system in our body is really impacted by distress and stress in our body. So last but not least, we have to talk about yoga. Trauma-informed yoga practices offer a gentle and compassionate approach that helps alleviate symptoms of trauma and other mental health issues. It's one of the three things that actually change the brain, according to studies about brain change. Meditation, yoga, and EMDR therapy, we can literally see pre and post to those practices, and we can see brain change. So by combining mindful movements, breath work, and meditation, yoga can help release tension that's stored in the body, help you regulate your nervous system, and cultivate a sense of safety and empowerment in your being. And so trauma-informed yoga classes prioritize choice, autonomy, self-compassion, creates a supportive environment for people navigating the complexities of trauma recovery and their body and things that are stored and locked within ourselves. And I absolutely personally love yoga. It was actually the very first skill that I learned that informed me just how disconnected from my body I actually was. I was such a human doing. I was so neck up. And I really didn't have a lot of connection to what was happening in my vessel. And I once heard that we're not meant to be human doings. We're human beings. And I really took that to heart with yoga, especially once I started to dive into how uncomfortable I was in my body and with stillness. So yoga keys you into just how much you hold in your body. And with the right kind of guidance, it helps you to learn how to release all the tension and the emotional stuckness that we hold. So most people have been seeing this show, Ted Lasso. It's one of my favorites ever made. And like Roy Kent says, it's the cat's pajamas, in my opinion. And so really check out yoga and see what it does for you. There's lots of YouTube channels that offer free opportunities to do yoga, even in your home. And so I recommend looking at Yoga Nidra, Yin Yoga. Those are slower yogas that are really body informed, and they're really about being super present and tuning in to what's happening emotionally. Those are great ones if you can't go to a yoga studio or find a trauma-informed yoga professional. Those are good ones that you could do on your own from the comfort of your own home. Well, that wraps up our episode for today on coping skills and for managing trauma, anxiety, depression, and other mental health symptoms. It's important to remember to find the right combination of these techniques and skills that resonate for you and work with your lifestyle and your schedule. But the key is to create a holistic approach to healing and recognizing that you have the power to heal. If you can slow down and go inside and really learn about what is emotionally happening in you and ultimately learning how to surrender that which you're holding on to. So thank you so much for tuning in. And until next time, remember to lead with love. It'll never steer you wrong.